I was saying all last night, Chris. Trick or treat, favorite night of the year.
Oh, wow.
Hey, everybody. Yes, welcome back to the Paid Search Podcast. My name is Jason Rothman. As always, I'm joined by the great Chris Schaefer, a former winner. Chris, how's it doing today?
That's it. That's it. Just former winner. Lovely. Jason.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding with you. I'm just kidding with you. I thought that would be funny. I thought about it before the show.
I like that.
But no, a man of many talents. He's had many formers, but we're his current.
Yeah, his current.
Chris, you're the great Chris Schaefer, the best AdWords manager on the planet, the best AdWords coach on the planet.
Ow.
And a guy, it looks like you got a haircut. So how's it going today on this Thursday, the 1st of November?
Yeah. So we're just recording after Halloween night. And Jason, I have a reason why I would have gone Halloween trick-or-treating because I have two children who are in the appropriate age range to go knocking on doors. Jason, what's your reason to go knocking on doors as a fully aged adult? Did you dress up and go knocking on doors?
Nope, no Halloween this year. I was just kidding at the intro of the show. Last year, as we've talked about before, speaking of high income, we talked about my massive house. Mm-hmm. And no, this isn't my mother's basement, as some people have accused me of. But you couldn't tell from the picture. But anyway, Chris, so yeah, last year had a few trick-or-treaters. It was nice. But then towards the end of the night, we started getting some people who obviously weren't from our neighborhood driving up with their car and taking like more than their fair share of candy. Mm. Turned me off to the whole thing. Yeah. We're taking a couple years off. It was rainy yesterday. And we just decided not to do it. I also read a story or a headline that someone's little kid somewhere in the country got meth in their candy and had to go to the hospital. And I was like, you know what? This just seems like a little bit of an outdated tradition for today's modern world. And I kind of like the idea, maybe when I'm a parent one day, you do trick-or-treating at church or at a school or at a business.
Controlled.
And it's an enclosed environment.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm too old school, but the whole go up to a stranger's house thing, it's just been rubbing me the wrong way lately.
There literally is, I mean, I knock on a stranger's door about once a year, and it's at the end of October because there's no other time that you just go up and just knock on a bunch of strange doors and just wait, staring at the door. Who's going to open the door? Who's going to talk to me? It is kind of a strange tradition.
You can see the look of disgust on my face right now. We were talking about YouTube and quote unquote creators before the show. Mm-hmm. So the YouTube mindset, content mindset is on my mind. So as soon as you said I only knock on strangers' neighbor's door once a year, I was like, wow, that is such a YouTube video to go. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go ask my neighbors for a cup of sugar. And like you hold the camera right up to them and they do real reactions of like getting to know their neighbors. I think that was a thing a few years ago, like some guy invited all his neighbors to a house party or something. But but yeah, Chris, good Halloween. I a few years ago on Facebook, I did an emo post that said, enjoy dressing up today, guys. I wear a mask every day of the year. Something like that. And then I'm surprised you didn't like my Facebook post yesterday. I told everyone what I had for dinner, not even a picture. I was just like, I just explained what I had for dinner. Maybe
it didn't
show up in your algorithm yet.
I don't. Nowadays, I open Facebook, look at the top right corner to see if there's any alerts. If it's not anything I need to take care of, I immediately close it and go to more important things like washing my hair at that point. I'm usually at the very bottom of my to-do list by the time I get to that. So, yeah, I don't check it very much. But anyway, speaking of high affinity people, how's that for a segue? Jason, help me.
That's okay, but I do them better. So speaking of high affinity people, high income people, we're going to talk about first the highest, most best search engine marketing agency for B2B and enterprise clients and campaigns. I'm talking about Directive Consulting. They're the go-to B2B and enterprise search engine marketing agency. We appreciate their support. They're today's sponsor, and you guys can get a free custom proposal at directiveconsulting.com. Now, Chris, you manage a lot of Google Ads campaigns. I manage a lot of Google Ads campaigns. Tell me if you get this question like I get it. A lot of clients want to get in front of high income people. And I'm like, baby, you're looking at one. And they're like, no, I'm not talking about just you. I'm talking about other people searching on Google. I'm a mover. I don't want to move apartments. I want to move 5,000, 6,000 square foot homes and make a lot of money. They want to get in front of high income people. It's something we come across often. At least I do. What is your experience with just dealing with clients asking this question? How do I get in front of high income people?
Yeah, it's difficult to promise, of course, that you can get someone a certain type of person because unlike other marketing networks, Google is entirely focused on the moment. They're focused on that person's interest at the time, and that interest is defined by what they physically type into their keyboard, into their phone when they're searching google.com. So it's a different definition of trying to find those people because you have to think outside of what the typical keyword is. So you were using movers, you know, you have to use the right language in your keyword. But the good news is, as Jason and I will talk about today, there's other ways to target and attract people to your product and your services apart from just the keyword. Because I'll admit, Jason, I think you would agree that that's probably the hardest part, is digging into and trying to figure out, like, what would a high income person describe this service as? You know, what would they use? So it's usually a subset of keywords that you wouldn't really think of. So today we're going to talk about how you can do it without necessarily just using the keyword. We're going to talk about demographics, location targeting, ad copy, audiences, negative keywords, all kinds of stuff. So good stuff coming up. So I'll tell you one of the first things that I do, just starting right off with demographics. This is something that, this goes way back, Jason. This goes back to a couple of years ago to the angry Jason talking about millennials. I start blocking 18 to 24 pretty much every time if it's something having to do with housing or home loans or real estate or, you know, certain things that are going to really require someone to be beyond that initial 18 to 24 age range. So cutting off that low age range is one of the first things I would do. Admittedly, it's not going to be a huge amount of traffic. Maybe 1%, 2% of the traffic might be fall underneath that. But I'm talking about for everything, if you have a display campaign and everything too. But that's one of the ways that I can do things there.
Yeah, at least like with a lot of movers, there's a decent amount of 18 to 24 year old searches. I'd say more. I mean, for overall searches, not B2B stuff, but more consumer, you can cut a good chunk of the traffic out with cutting out 18 to 24. I think that's a good thing to do. If you're looking for high income, there's just not a lot of 18 to 24 year olds that are earning a high income. And by the way, Chris, why would they? All they need is a $60 a month iPhone plan. They can get partners from apps. You know what I mean? Swipe left, swipe right. They can get food delivered to their mom's basement. Yep. They can play Fortnite. There's really not much you need besides a phone. So those people don't work. They don't have a lot of money, just in general, 18 and 24 year olds. Chris, when I get a client who's specifically asking about high income and really drilling down on that, I take it a step further and I go 25 to 34 year olds. I exclude them.
Wow.
Because if, you know, 25 to 34 year olds, they do live outside the house. They do hold down jobs. They do, I mean, even when they're getting fast food, they actually pick up their bodies and go get it in the drive-thru as opposed to paying some app to bring it to their house. They work, but there's just not a lot of 25 to 34 year olds that are in high income. Like, yes, there's the one or two out there that make a high income, and I'm sure maybe 5 to 10% of 25 to 34 year olds make a really high income. But just where they are in the corporate ladder most often, it's not a high income, like a super high income. So I just exclude them right off the bat too.
Yeah. Okay. I get it. Yeah. And in the end, the amount that you're losing is much smaller than what you would be gaining. So yeah, I think that makes sense. Another thing in demographics is the household income. Jason, I know we talked about that many times before, but you can exclude certain percentages. And just briefly to go into the mechanics of how it works, let's take off some foil hats right at the beginning. Google does not know how much you make. It merely has information about the zip code that you are in and what the average income of that zip code is. Okay. So any information that people would say, you know, Google knows what I can help target people that make $90,000 and above a year. No, that's not true. You can target zip codes that are above a certain amount or a certain percentage. So just to be clear on how all that works. But
Chris, do you, everything moves so fast. Do you, I know you just said it, so you believe it. But putting my tinfoil hat back on, like gun to my head, which I've had clients pull on me, gun to my head. I honestly think, like if I had to bet money, maybe I'm going to sound stupid here, but I'm not saying, obviously, I'm not saying they know exactly how much everyone makes. I'm just saying with all this data floating around, isn't there something more they're doing than just looking at zip code data?
Well, I just know what I've been told. That's what Google reps have told me. It's based on data from data collecting companies, the stuff that you can buy publicly.
Yeah.
There's nothing private out there.
Oh, I'm not saying it's private stuff. I'm just saying maybe it's more, I would hope it's more complex than just zip code, because zip codes are big, man.
Yeah, that's, you know, true. That's true. But there is a big diversity between, you know, a zip code on one side of the city and a zip code on another. You know, so
that's true.
You know, there's, you know, just like there's, you know, always a difference between east and west and north and south in a large metro city. So it can make a difference. But yeah, you know, who knows? Honestly, I find it completely insignificant of any value of my time to try and figure out how it works or why it works, just to know that it works.
Right.
That's really all I care
just,
about.
Or just to try it
just,
and see.
Just to try it.
See exactly. If it works. Because one of the things you're going to run into, if I'm just looking up here, Chris, exactly what that column is called, or whatever they call it, the new tab. It's under demographics. So under demographics, when you go to household income, you can see top 10%, top 20, top 30, top 40, or top 10, 20 to 10, 30 to 20, 40 to 30, 50 to 40, and then the bottom 50, and then unknown. You can do bid adjustments on those. You can totally exclude them. And this really matters, Chris. When people, if you're going to exclude everybody, including unknown, except the top 10% of income in your target location, assuming you're not targeting an entire state or an entire country, like say you're targeting the Dallas metro area, your traffic is going to get cut significantly. So it really does cut down on the traffic. So then you have to weigh how good is it to get high income people versus the volume you need to get. A nice thing about this is if you needed to test it and easily control it, you could just have multiple campaigns and each campaign has its own percentage. So like the top 10% in one campaign, 20 to 10 in the second campaign. If you need to constantly be going on and off and get that data clean, there's no downside to that as long as it's purely in different incomes. And this is just something you have to test to see if you can get enough income that you want to get. And the other thing to keep in mind is sometimes the top income doesn't necessarily convert at the highest rate. So it's another, it's not an easy, as easy as the household income thing sounds, I think is the point I'm trying to make, Chris. There are drawbacks to it, to playing with that.
Yeah.
But if you're interested in income, which is the point of this episode, that's definitely one of the top places you need to go to. I think the final thing we would say is just be careful with unknown. That's when Google is not sure. That's a lot of the traffic. I think the metric we always use is 50% as a baseline will fall under the unknown. So if you turn that off, you're going to lose a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
But Chris, this get the things we just talked about, demographics, ages, household income, it's basically versions, well, not age, but the income thing is basically a version of location targeting, like you talked about with the zip codes.
Yeah.
So this is just a different option. You can do the same kind of goal, have the same goals, but go about it a different way and just target different locations. So you can target different parts of town, different towns, different neighborhoods, different zip codes, decrease bids in some, exclude some that you just know are no good, only target the high income zip codes or part of town you want to target, maybe even do it with a radius. Do you find yourself doing this for some clients, Chris, where they just tell you like, hey, I don't want to deal with anybody from the south side of town or whatever?
Yeah, absolutely. This is something I've had it. I'll tell you two different ways that I use it. One way is if a client's working nationally, they will have certain areas of the country that are more likely to convert. So we will target at the state level. Okay, so you know they may leave the West Coast. I have certain clients that are like, I don't like to deal with people on the West Coast. They, you know, they tend to not work well for my product, blah blah blah, or my service. So we exclude the West Coast and all those states there. And then everything east of there, they'll go with. So same thing on the state level. So if they're locating a specific geographic area, they will. I've had clients send me geographic data that they've looked up and done on their own internally and say, okay, this is information that we bought separately for a different, you know, mailing campaign or something like that. These are the zip codes that we are targeting for a mailer campaign, or we're doing a TV ad. So this is the stuff we also want to run our ads on. So, you know, that's another way I could do it. So there's a lot of information. And I think, you know, you're right. The demographic is kind of a way of automating that and saying only show top 10, 20, 30%. And then the targeting, the location targeting, is more of a manual way to do something like that.
Chris, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, income targeting with Google Ads, it's kind of trying to do with Google Ads, even though they're encouraging it with things like the demographics, it's trying to do with Google Ads on search. It's trying to make it something that it wasn't originally. So this is all about keywords. We always get back to that. It's all about search terms and adding this layer of trying to get in front of only high income people. Yes, there are things you can do that we're going over. Yes, Google gives you options with things like demographics. But at the end of the day, it's difficult because it's not originally what the system was set up for with keywords. And they're moving in that direction. The more of the overall who's the person behind the search kind of advertising, they're obviously moving in that direction, but it's still primarily based on keywords. So one of the things I want to get across to people with this episode is that there's no like magical fix. Like, yes, you can use household income under demographics and see if it works, but I'm not the most confident in it. There's things you can do, but whenever you go in this direction, you're kind of going off the grid a little bit in terms of what Google Ads search is set up for. And I think one of the things we'll try to show on this episode is that there's no-brainer things you can do. They're common sense things. You can try them and they'll probably work well, but there's no like magic silver bullet beyond household income. But Chris, check me on this. I want to see what you think about this statement. As a Google Ads manager, as someone who's a premier Google partner, as someone who has, I guess, half interest in the number one Google Ads podcast, as someone who's been called one of the best AdWords Google Ads managers in the world, as someone who has clients from Kentucky to Kenya, from New York to New Zealand, I want to say that if I have a client who tells me they want to be in front of high-income people, I'm focusing more on location targeting than I am on the household income thing. Is that a crazy statement to you? Like, yes, maybe I'll turn off bottom 50% of income. Maybe I'll turn off bottom 40% of income, but I'll leave the top 30% on there. And if I don't get enough traffic, I'll add in 40 to 30 and I'll leave unknown on there because I need traffic. I need traffic. But when I know a city well, like I know Oklahoma City, I'm confident that the best way to get in front of high income people is to control the location and get in front of where people live and work who are in high income. That's my number one tip for this episode, is that to control getting in front of high income people, control your location targeting.
Yeah.
That's where I'm looking at, because I can't think of anything else besides the household income thing, which is just an easy, do you want to target that bracket or not, that can control this better than location.
So I actually have a very different answer and a different perspective on it. But first, I want you to go through our sponsor here because it's going to jump into our next segment because I have a very different type of view on how I approach it. I don't think one is necessarily more correct than the other, but I'm curious to kind of jump in and dig through this.
I'll be interested to hear. Now, Chris, I want to take a second today and talk about Directive Consulting. They are today's sponsor. They support the Paid Search podcast, and we recommend that you guys check out Directive. They are the number one B2B and enterprise search engine marketing agency. And today I want to tell you about the work they did with an auto insurance company. Auto insurance is something we've talked about quite a bit on this show. Auto insurance is big in the search engine marketing space. A lot of people trying to get on that first page, whether it's through ads or organic. Directive was working with an auto insurance company. That company felt like they were not getting the attention that their account deserved from their prior agency, and they did not like the results they were getting. They wanted to do what we all want to do. They wanted to get an increase in organic traffic, and they wanted to drastically decrease their cost per lead. So they went to Directive. Directive went to work. The first thing they did was to study the keywords that they wanted to show up on organically, and they systematically picked out the ones that they thought they could show up on quickly. So they went after the searches that are still good searches that you want to show up on, but that were a little bit less competitive and more attainable. So that's what they did with their SEO work, and they aggressively went after those keywords, gained authority on them, and their rankings increased. And then for paid, the primary thing they did was to look at the old data, pick out what was working, throw out what was not working, but they combined that analysis with custom landing pages. This is the nice thing about Directive. They do it all. SEO, PPC, landing pages. They tie it all together. The landing pages drastically increase their conversion rates and lower their cost per conversion. Let's go over the results. They were able to get a 107% increase in organic traffic. Their cost per lead, per paid lead, went down 590%. That sounds like a lot, but Chris and I have seen over and over when someone who knows what they're doing gets inside of a Google Ads account after someone who did not know what they were doing, the results can be drastic in the positive direction. And then the increase in overall leads from paid search went up 82%. The marketing director of this auto insurance company is quoted as saying there have been substantial increases on the paid search side and a decrease in the cost for acquisition of new users. The team has been excellent to work with and is consistent, not to mention always available for any questions. They're experts in their field, and it's evident throughout the process. That is Directive Consulting. We recommend you guys go to their website, directiveconsulting.com. They offer free custom proposals, and you can tell them the Paid Search Podcast guys, host, people sent you, and we appreciate them sponsoring today's episode. Now, Chris, before we talked about Directive, you were very smugly and confidently saying that you disagreed with me, and I'd love to hear what the hell you were talking about.
Okay, so again, you have a feeling, and I have a feeling. Okay, so my feeling, you were basing your thoughts on location.
What are you, the black-eyed pea? I've got a feeling. You got a feeling.
See,
just tell me. Stop spinning it up. Just tell me what you think. Don't be scared. Daddy won't bite.
I don't have as much confidence on the location targeting.
I know, because you think everybody, you hate commutes and you hate that old life you had so much that you just picture everybody in the planet who has a job must drive 7 hours each way to work and be in a different location. You don't factor in that some people like living in the upper income part of town and they like working in the upper income part of town. But go ahead. I want to know.
I would challenge you to look at percentages. I'm not going to do it now because we're recording live, and I don't want to do it. You know, I don't have a researcher that I pay. But I would suggest that average American drives 20 miles, something like that. You can look it up. So that would essentially take them. You can be my research monkey. So that would take them outside of the zip code that they're in. So my idea is that location is not really as precise as what I prefer, something that I have control over. I can control the messaging and the way that people search. So the two ways that if a client says, Chris, I want to reach high affinity, high income people that, you know, have money to, this is more of a luxury, you know, instead of buying a vacation, they're going to buy a getaway. You know, they don't buy vacations, they buy getaways, you know. So this is the kind of person I'm going after. So the messaging that I do is my ad copy. Okay. I use language shows quality. I use the word boutique and luxury, full service, handmade, stuff like that. You know, that's the language that I use. That will attract a uniqueness to something that's, you know, you're buying a pair of shoes. Right next to it, you see a pair of shoes that say handmade, boutique. What's the word when someone bespoke?
Handcrafted.
Bespoke leather shoes, yeah. You know, stuff like this. I've had plenty of clients that, you know, NYC type of stuff, you know, that's like you walk in and you want a pair of pants and they'll make it for you from like some luxurious thing. It's ridiculous. I'd never go after it myself, but you need to speak to people like that. So the language also... prices and headlines. I have direct influence on what they see in the prices and headlines. Don't want no scrub clicking on my 400 pair of jean ad and expecting to get them for $40. I'm going to put $400 in that thing. And they're not going to click on it because they can't afford $400 jeans and they're not going to waste my client's money. So the ad copy is great to me. And then we'll talk about it a little bit later, but keywords I pile on as well. So my thought is less on demographics, less on location. I can't control those. I like ad copy and keywords. I like the, you know, what I can control are both of those. I can control what they see and what they type, and I'm happy. There you go.
Yeah, I like that. Now, ad copy is definitely, it's one of the things I wrote down. I agree with it. Trying your best. You're not going to get 100% because some people you don't want to will still see your ad and click it and think it's a good fit for them. But trying your best to turn off the wrong people and turn on the right people. So like for a moving company, if the ad goes on and on about how you're not the cheapest, but you're the best, on and on about all the services you offer with the move, your record, just showing that you're not the cheapest option, but you're the best option, that would hopefully turn off some of the people that are very price conscious that you don't want. So I do agree, ad copy is something you have to do if you only want to be in front of high-income people. The only thing I'll say lastly about location, Chris, is I think the thing with location and in terms of high-income is, yes, you definitely, when you only target high-income parts of town, you're not going to know what you're missing out on. You're not going to know if someone is in a different part of town working, if they were the most high-income, best person to click on your ad and do business with your client. But you will know that the people overall who you want to see your ad cluster in those high income areas. And so there's a good chance that you're going to be in front of those people. So I think just giving up the fact that, yeah, I'm going to miss out on some stuff, but that's because the client's pushing me to only do high income and we have to do this. I think if you looked at it that way, I think we're in agreement. Like, yeah, we're going to have to give stuff up.
Yeah.
But that's part of the deal. But yeah, with that copy, you don't have to give anything up. You still get in front of people. Your ads don't show less often and you get the right messages to people. That's not going to be 100%. There's still going to be people who are totally cost conscious, totally low income and that's the conundrum, Chris. Some people don't read or comprehend that well. And then they click on that.
That is the problem.
So that's something we both know. You can't block out those people entirely just with that copy, but it's a no-brainer. You definitely want to do it. Speaking of who these people are, Chris, you learn something every day. Audiences. There's a relatively new section in Google Ads called Audiences, right there in that vertical column. And we had talked about this a few weeks ago, how there's in-market people that you can target. You can target remarketing list in there. But now they have a who they are section. And in the who they are section, you can target people based on their education, and you can target people based on their home ownership status, whether they're a homeowner or a renter. And then with education, you can, I guess I cut off my screen grab there, but you can talk about their highest level of attainment. So high school graduates, or do you want to target bachelor's degree people, or do you want to target advanced degree people? This isn't a one-for-one, but we're just trying to help you guys come up with ideas how to get in front of high-income people. Not everybody who has an advanced degree is going to be high-income. Not everybody who doesn't have an advanced degree is not going to be high-income. But generally, people with more advanced degrees earn more than people with less. People with bachelor's degrees earn more than high school graduates on average. Same thing with homeowners. Probably homeowners are higher income on average than renters. So this is one way you can kind of tilt the odds in your favor. Just target people with a college degree. Just target people with an advanced degree if you want. Just target homeowners and narrow down that audience. Chris, this is brand new to me. What's your experience with this new Who They Are thing?
Yeah, it's. I think it's great. I'm always for getting more data. Okay, and here's the thing you didn't mention. You talked about specifically targeting these Who They Are homeowners, higher education audiences. But what I love, and I think I mentioned this last week, I'm going in and I'm adding audiences in bulk. And some clients, I'm adding the Who They Are in bulk, and I'm adding, you know, high school, bachelor degree, advanced education, homeowner, renter, stuff like that, parent, not a parent, stuff like that. And I'm adding that as an observation. And when I add that as observation, I can now get data on that. So I think it's great. Sometimes, well, I'll tell you, not even sometimes, the majority of the time, the information and the data is just everywhere. There's not really any certain trends. I can't draw a line and say, wow, did you know that homeowners that are parents that have a high school education, you know, convert at 40% more? No, that's not really going to happen. I mean, stuff is never that clean. But in reality, it's nice to have it. And if you do see a trend, you can bid up or pull back on those bids. I would love for Google to back off a bit on the automation. You know, we don't need quite so much automation, but more on data. I'd love to get more data in as many ways as they can possibly provide it. And this audience stuff is right up my alley. So, Jason,
you're a watcher of people.
Yes,
you're a peeping Tom.
Yes,
you're a porta potty peeping Tom.
I love these terms.
I'll tell you about that. I'll tell you about that after the show. But Chris, you're a watcher of people. I've never seen you perk up. Like I have since I've told you about this observation thing. You love just throwing it on there. It's not going to mess with your results.
Yeah.
It's not changing anything. You've already got set up, but you love seeing how they react.
It's like throwing open a curtain on my data that was never there before. It's like this whole new thing. I love it because,
by the way, you know what is so hilarious, Chris, about people who try to write a blog article with a nice little GIF and act like they know everything going on inside of Google, which we don't.
Yeah.
We take the opposite approach.
Yeah, we don't know.
About what we know and don't know. We're honest about that. We know a lot. We know more than 99% of the population about Google because it's our business day to day, but we know 99% less than the people who work at Google who are running the black boxes behind the scenes.
Yeah.
What's hilarious is that throw open the curtain is a great term because it's not like they came up with this stuff yesterday.
Yeah, it's
like
been there.
Being able to see the data on people who have a bachelor's degree versus advanced degree or homeowners versus renters. Like if they're throwing it in the interface, obviously that's something they've had access to and been crafting for years probably.
Yeah.
So what the heck else is going on behind the scenes that they know about that we don't with that little enhanced cost per conversion or things like that? So throwing open the curtain made me crack up about the people who act like they know what's really going on behind the stuff we can't see, because obviously there's just tons of data that we don't get access to, and they're slowly starting to add more and more stuff. And I think it's awesome because I've always said if Google bought Facebook, it would just be the most powerful advertising thing ever. Because you combine the accuracy of search with the accuracy of the social media demographics, you can't beat it. And that's the direction they're kind of going in with all these new layers.
I would be surprised, you know, if they don't have people that are like in the quote unquote likely audience category. For example, likely Toyota owner or likely business owner. Or you know things like that. So they are likely, based on their search history and trend, not that they're in market for something, but they are likely a person that does X or owns X. I'd be surprised if there isn't some information out there that's behind a curtain that we can't see. And stuff like that. It's exciting to know what could be a possibility. And suddenly, this high-income person that they're seeking out, possibly in the future, this could be something that could really be isolated. I want to go after people that are business owners and own a Toyota. Well, I got a surprise for you, buddy. You know, I mean, that'd be amazing.
Right. It's just that the possibilities can go on and on. And it's obviously going in the direction of we're going to get more and more options. But bringing it all back to the core portion of search keywords, Let's talk about positive keywords you can add to try to get in front of higher income people, and negative keywords to block lower income, more cost conscious people. When it comes to positive keywords, I really want to hear what you have to say, because I don't have that much to add other than it'd be great if I had a bunch, but I just don't know how many there are. We'll talk about that. But negative keywords, I think this is great. It's ironic that we talked about how to get in front of high income people. Well, with negative keywords, you're getting in front of everyone who's searching for your keywords, but you're trying to get in front of the high income people by blocking out the low income people. And so stuff that comes to mind, Chris, where it's like cheap, cost, how much, inexpensive, affordable. People who are cost conscious looking for, like if someone does a search, affordable movers. Obviously, they're not the high-end customer that the person's wanting because they're very cost conscious. And then industry specific, you'll see a lot of search terms for movers. And an industry specific one is people search like $200 movers or $100 movers, and they think they're going to get a couple men out to help them for $100 for a couple hours. That's lower income. Or at least that's not someone who has a 600 or 6,000 square foot house that's going to spend $3,000 on their move. So it's not the high income person the person wants. So there's industry specific negatives you can add. Anything else with negatives that we're missing, Chris, besides just those basic ones like cheap and affordable?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. This is the kind of thing that, as you know, it's a never ending pit of negative keywords. This is the kind of thing you don't just throw 50 out there and say done. There's always going to be more. So no, I don't think there's any huge rocket science. It's just an ongoing process. Keep adding them. Keep looking at your search terms and you'll find those little outliers that are like, oh, Walmart, Costco, Amazon, stuff like that. If you're selling a premium product or a service, you don't want to sell, you know, you're not selling something at a retail store, then block high, you know, high searched retailers, Amazon, Walmart, Costco, stuff like that. So I want to talk a little bit about the other side of things. So we talk about negative keywords. So getting into, for lack of a better term, positive keywords, I'll give you my spin on this. So positive keywords, or just keywords, are going to be difficult to find, but I have a suggestion, and it requires, for you AdWords managers out there, it's going to require the worst part of your job, emailing your client and asking a question. And then for you business owners, it's going to be the hardest part of your job. It's thinking outside of your in-the-box type of lingo. You know, think outside of what you know and consider the language that a layman uses. Consider something not, you know, your actual business hardcore description, but how people approach it. Okay, I'm going to give you an example. Let's say you have a money lending or something in a financial sector, and you're going after keywords for, you know, money lender or get a loan or something like that, okay? And you want to go after higher affinity, more wealthy people that understand that better. So what do you say instead of mortgage company or get a mortgage or get a loan, right? Those are very basic. They could be across the spectrum of people making money. Instead of saying that, you might say something that is more specific to the industry itself. I'm not going to say that I understand all this, but one example might be someone doing a search for hard cash loan or hard money loan, right? This is someone who understands that they don't just want a loan. They have an asset. They have a tool that can get them a loan that's beyond just the normal loan. And there are things like turbo loans, and I've come across a lot of people in the financial sector that have thrown these words at me, and I'm like, what is that? And they're like, oh, let me tell you, it's a very specific thing that very few people know. So the volume of search would be very small, but it would be the right kind of people that would know that term. So this is the kind of stuff that you as the manager would not know. And a business owner, you may not think about it, but you may be sitting on some of the best terms that you know, and only 2% of the population might know, and the search volume would be very low. And bada bing, bada boom, you've got a great high influence number of people or high income people that are going to know this term and be searching for you. So the hard part is figuring out what those terms are. The easy part is just adding them in.
Let me give you an example from the moving business. Unless you're in the business, you'll never have heard of this term or someone who can afford it and wants it. When someone, white glove moving service, when someone refers to white glove service, they generally mean that it's over the top, something that the wealthy only have the ability to afford. So with movers, it's basically the white glove service. It's when someone does a search for white glove movers, they want over the top. They know they're going to pay thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, but it's what they want. And so that's an example of an industry-specific term that's a little bit beyond the just luxury or high-end search. It's an actual industry term. And yeah, it's going to be lower volume, but that's what it gets you, what you want if you're only getting, trying to get in front of high-income people. And here's the thing, Chris. I don't really have any other examples. Well, I guess I have one with divorce lawyers. There's something, when someone gets a divorce, like everyday people, there's not many assets to split up, so they just search for a divorce lawyer. But when someone does have a lot of assets to protect when they break up, they do certain searches for divorce lawyer with the word assets. So you could do like broad match modified, divorce lawyer and assets, or even broad match modified and leave the word assets unmodified and see what comes up. But those are the only two I have an example off the top of my head, because like you say, these are industry specific terms that you're going to have to, as a business owner, know or ask your clients. But that's the way to go about it. What are some searches that only high income people would do for your industry? Those are the kind of keywords you would want to target. And Chris, maybe if the location's large enough, if the budget's small enough, if the goal is so extreme that you only want to show up to high-income people, maybe you only use Google Ads to target those kind of keywords. And they complement whatever other form of marketing you're doing.
Yeah.
But that's how you would do it with the positive side. And beyond that, you have words like luxury, so kitchen remodel, luxury kitchen remodel, high-end movers. But beyond the industry-specific ones and a few terms like luxury and high-end, I would say there's not too much else to talk about with keywords, because we all search for things the same way. And someone who's poor and someone who's rich, for the most part, they're going to search for a mover the same way. Movers in Dallas, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I'll end it with this. You cannot have it both ways. Do not look for ways that Jason and I have described and be upset when your search volume drops. Okay. You cannot find high income people. You cannot try and find a small segment of the population and then be upset because you're not getting much traffic. Okay. So you can't have it both ways. This is an exclusive relationship between trying to get a certain type of traffic and then you suddenly give up some of your volume. So be wary of that. But I think in the end, that's what's so great about AdWords. It's about quality, less on quantity. I can get you 4 million clicks, but they're going to be crap. And they'll be cheap, but they'll be crap. That's not what AdWords is about, and that's not what Jason and I are here about. So that's it for me.
Can I just give you an example of how this works as just the AdWords manager mindset? I started Googling things like divorce lawyer asset, and something I always talk about now that the big red button is gone, the suggestions, the related searches at the bottom of the page, I saw a search. Well, then I did divorce lawyer asset protection, and now I'm seeing searches they suggest like how to hide assets in a divorce, pre-divorce asset protection planning, what assets are protected from divorce. This is where AdWords management is not so straightforward, because Chris and I always talk about deep funnel. That's where the conversions are. However, a search like what assets are protected from divorce, that could be considered high funnel. Because in this situation, divorce lawyer, obviously Tampa, divorce lawyer Tampa would be super deep funnel. That's someone who's looking for a divorce lawyer right now. What assets are protected from divorce? That's high funnel. Someone doesn't even know if they want a divorce lawyer yet, but they just want to know what they're looking at here. But if you're that, if you're that person who wants to get in front of high-end people, you probably want to be there, because the value of a high-end client is so much more worth than paying $7 for what assets are protected from divorce. So that's an example where it's not just deep funnel. It's okay, you want to get in front of high income people. Let's target some high income searches that are higher funnel, because high income is the primary goal in this situation. And then back to ad copy, Chris, one of the lawyers there, it says asset protection lawyers protect your wealth and family. And then he uses words protect and preserve your assets and wealth. Schedule an analysis with this lawyer today.
There you go.
Not a free consultation. protect and preserve your wealth, schedule an analysis. So that's a perfect example of a guy who's targeting the right keywords and who knows how to get in front of high income people and uses ad copy to attract those high income people. So I just thought that would be a great example to, yeah, to tie it all together.
Definitely.
And if I had to guess, Chris, this is a random lawyer, but I can't see anybody in the country tying it all together like that as well as Chris Schaefer. So I think this is your client, Chris. And if anybody wants to get in front of high income people, the only option you have is Chris Schaefer.
Oh, no. There are always two options. Chris,
oh, shucks.
Jason's
oh, shucks.
An alternate.
I play the nice guy on YouTube. Oh, shucks.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, guys. That's it. I hope that's useful. I think, Jason, solid stuff. Solid ideas.
Yeah, I think there's not any like hidden silver bullets, gems, but it's thinking about AdWords. It's knowing what all the options are, number one, and then thinking through things and trying to come up with a plan that maybe it'll work in month one, maybe it'll take 6 months to crack, but you at least are thinking about it and know all your options. So that's it for today's episode. We appreciate today's sponsor, Directive Consulting, B2B. Enterprise Search Engine Marketing Agency. We recommend you guys get a free custom proposal at directiveconsulting.com. We are here every Monday with the Paid Search Podcast. All we ask is that you share it with a friend, leave us a review and rating on iTunes. And then if you can't get enough, we're here every weekday on the PPC Questions and Answers show. Send us your questions at paidsearchpodcast.com on the contact page. We'll answer them live on the air. We're going to get out of here. I'm going to tell Chris about this porta potty thing, and we'll see you guys next time on the Paid Search Podcast.